Today we're continuing with the series entitled Strengthened in Might, with this being part three. In part two, we began to go through the story of Joshua and the children of Israel when they were coming into the Promised Land. They'd conquered Jericho, and now they were coming into the land that God had given to them, and God had given them various specific instruction that they were to carry out. And so we went through some of that in chapter 7, where right away, from the very beginning there, there were things that they didn't do that they should have. And so God addressed that with them. I thought it'd be good to go back and look at some of the last part of that, because there was an individual by the name of Achan, if you remember, who was of the tribe of Judah, who had taken some of those things that he wasn't supposed to, that no one was supposed to, things that God had set apart, again, that weren't to be taken by anyone, and he took them. He took some silver, he took some other things as well, as we'll go through part of this. I don't remember if that's what I'm going to review here, but anyway, you remember some of the story of what we went through, and God dealt with that in a very powerful way. And you can't help but be moved by certain things like that, and it should move us. It should sober us. It should really stir up a kind of, not just a soberness, but even a fear to ever do anything contrary to what God tells us. Because God will take care of those things, especially with us. Now, He did with them as a nation, as a physical people, because He was working with them as He was. But I think of ourselves. I think of the church and things that I've seen since 69, since I've been in the church. And God deals with things. God takes care of things. If things aren't right, He addresses them. It might not be in our time. It might not be sometimes if we see a thing that it happened immediately. It may go on sometimes for years. God may allow some things to take place for a long time because His people can learn through that. God teaches us through various things that we experience. And there are some things you can't understand or learn until you've experienced it. And so God allows us to have various experiences. And so some of these things we experience. And all of us have experienced various things since we've come into God's church. It's a great way to learn. You can be taught. We can learn certain things by what we're told, Sabbath by Sabbath. But when you experience it in your own life, when you experience some of the things you're taught, that's what makes them come alive even more so, and helps to embed them more deeply in our mind to where we gain understanding then. It's not a matter just then of knowledge, it's a matter of understanding. So it's an awesome thing how God works with us, and then through time, as we learn to apply things in the right way and respond to the understanding that God has given to us, because then we're absolutely without excuse. It's one thing to have knowledge. It's another thing when you have understanding and then you turn against God, go against something He said. So stories like this to me helped us help in the sense of having that which is sobering and to be reminded, don't do anything against God. Don't go against His word. Don't go against His way of life. Don't resist it. Look to God continually. Work to put Him first in your life. And that's a process of something that only we can choose to do. And so we learn from that. And so stories like this that are in the Old Testament, though they be physical very much in nature, they have many spiritual lessons that go along with them. And that's why we're going through some of these things, to learn some of those things, to think about some of those things, and with the experiences we have had, to grow even more. Because understanding in time is to turn into wisdom. And what does that mean? Well, wisdom, true wisdom, is that which comes from God, God only. And that's why I like how it states that in the Proverbs. In the New Testament, even the word, logos, it's the same thing. It's the mind, it's the being, it's the revelatory thought of God. And that is wisdom. It's wisdom for us to desire to want to have the same kind of mind, the same thinking. And so the reality is with time, through experience, through understanding, and the fact that we apply those things of understanding in time, it can become a part of wisdom to us, that we think like God. Now that's an awesome transformation that takes place in the mind, that we can actually have the thinking changed in our mind. That's what it's all about in Romans chapter 12 when it talks about those things and the transforming that can take place and how we think. Now, to me, that's a beautiful and awesome thing that we can have that developed within us over time. We still have human nature, but what an incredible thing that we can have more of the mind of God as we grow spiritually. And that's what growth is all about, becoming more at one with God. So in this story of Joshua, let's pick it up here in verse 24. Then Joshua and all Israel with him took Achan, the son of Zerah, the silver, the garment, the wedge of gold, his sons, his daughters, his oxen, his donkeys, his sheep, his tent, and all that he had. And they brought them to the valley of Achor. And Joshua said, "Why did you bring trouble upon us?" That's why they suffered like they did. That's why some of those soldiers or the army that went up against Ai, that they were killed. And they weren't given a victory. God wasn't going to give them a victory. He wasn't going to help them to conquer. I love that. If you understand what that means in the New Testament, to conquer, the word overcome in the New Testament is to conquer. That's what it means. The ability to conquer, the ability to overcome. And God will not give us the ability to overcome and to conquer if there's sin involved until we fully repented of sin. And so this is a part of the lesson that's being learned here, or that is available here to be learned. And God dealt then with him in a very specific way. And he says, "Why have you troubled us?" And so the reality is that sin is a trouble to God's people. It's a trouble to God's church. It hurts. Scriptures talk about how that which is a matter of leaven can spread quickly throughout a church. I've lived through this over and over again in God's church since 1969. I've seen various waves of things come along. Early 70s, up to 72 in that period of time, and then 74 with Pentecost, and then on and on you go. Different times when there have been eruptions or what the scripture refers to as a quake, like an earthquake in the Bible. Those things aren't just a physical thing, but a shaking. And that shaking we've experienced many a time, and it just grew worse and worse until we had the ultimate of shakings with the apostasy in 1984. So to go through these things like we have has been incredible. And the reality is, as it talks about in Corinthians, as Paul explains when he talks about the days of unleavened bread and preparing for the Passover and the days of unleavened bread, is to get rid of leaven, to get rid of sin, to get rid of, because it spreads quickly and it can spread throughout a church. And that's happened in church area after church area after church area since I've been in God's church and since some of you have been in God's church. Some of you have gone through and learned those things. I think of Washington, D.C. area, hundreds and hundreds. Well over 1,000 people, because they were under one regional minister at that time, who, because of his attitude and because of his teachings and a little subtlety over time, just like Satan did to the angelic realm, it's exactly the same thing. He begins to bring in his own thoughts and ideas, things negative about doctrine, things negative about Mr. Armstrong, and then after a while starts teaching them a little bit something different here that they ooh and ah about. Human nature is an incredible thing. And after a few years under that, an entire church, churches, plural, can be swept away. I think of Hawaii, who went, I think, through three of those, two for sure, where it was totally decimated. Totally. Various regions like that the church in different areas have gone through from time to time until we finally experienced it church-wide around the world. So it's not something to be taken lightly. God makes sure that we learn. He pulls back from us. He allows various things to happen so that we can learn from it, but we suffer when there is sin around, and the church does suffer when there is sin. I hate it when I think of the times past, because I don't feel like we have it. I know we don't, to any degree, what we had years ago, and even 5 or 6 years ago or 4 years ago, because a lot of that's just been gotten rid of, thankfully, thank God. And those things hurt the church. They truly do. And they can spread from one person to another. And that, being on guard, and it becomes more of a battle, because then you have friendships and relationships that interfere. So this is what was taking place. God wasn't going to allow them to have any victory, any ability to conquer, to overcome an enemy, until they had dealt with this sin. Awesome. And so he says, "Why have you troubled us? Today the Lord will bring trouble upon you." Eventually, everyone pays. There is a time for judgment. There is a time when God executes the judgment. And that's just a reality of life. No one gets by with sin. So Israel stoned him with stones. That basically means they did exactly that, but they killed them. That's how they were killed. And they burned them with fire after they had stoned them with the stones. Then they raised over him a great pile of stones that is still there to this day. So the Eternal turned away the burning of his anger. Therefore, I really don't like that how it's translated, some of these things in the Old Testament, because when we think of the word anger, we think of human nature and anger when people get angry. It's not the same thing. It's just a matter, the word, it really has more to do with a response because of what you've done. And now, because of what you've done, I have to deal with it. You have to go through certain things now. As a result of this, judgment has to be executed. That's what it's about. And so he does it. He executes the judgment. And it's not a matter that he's like, you know, like we do as human beings, and we lose control or whatever, or start to lose control, or we raise our voice and get really loud and argue and fight. God doesn't do that. Okay. The great God of the universe doesn't do that. So again, there's some things like this in translations that people just can't get. So this is how it's written, because that's all human beings can understand without God's Spirit. Hopefully we see it far more clearly. Therefore, the name of the place had been called the Valley of Achan, literally trouble to this day. So because he troubled Israel, God troubled him, brought trouble to him, ended his life, had his executed judgment. Joshua chapter 8. So after the sin had been addressed, then God sent them forward to show them that he is the one who gives courage, strength, favor, and greatness. That's what he does for his people. When we obey, the more we obey in our individual lives, the more we obey as a collective body, as the Church of God even, because that's what we're to learn from these things, because the principle is the same. One is to a physical nation, the other is to a church. And so the more we grasp and understand those things, this is why God is having us focus upon that, because of where we are in time. We are at a very, I marvel at that. We're hearing things in the news constantly that are just, it's like prophecy just flowing out there right now, things that are happening and things that are ready to go whenever it's God's time. And things that are being revealed to this world, to mankind, I think of government alone. Government of the world of man doesn't work. And that's being magnified many times over. And so people sit around now and they talk about it and they debate it and they don't come to the conclusion. You know what? We can't govern ourselves. But they can't come to that conclusion. They can't see it. They can't grasp and understand it. Instead, they think somebody's going to come through here and somebody's got to be right and somebody's going to do something to help. But you can't please all the people by any measure, even within a single party of people supposedly heading the same direction. They're not. They disagree. They want their own special interests taken care of. And all the garbage that goes on out there and all the lying. And today, some of the bitterness and hatred and smugness. No respect for offices whatsoever. You think, this is incredible what we're experiencing. God is blessing us, the world, for these things to be manifest. Man cannot govern himself. Only God can. It's because of how we live and how we think that things don't work. I think of how dumb human nature, human beings can be. Vote. Get somebody in. Then vote to get them out, to put somebody else in, because they didn't take care of my problems. And this next person, I really feel like they will. And back and forth. It's been that way for centuries. And you think, where's the great lesson in all this? Who's ever solved your problems? You go through cycles. You go through various things. I'm sorry. I can't help it. I am so sick of this sick world. And I think God has given us a great big dose of that, especially within the church, to be able to see these things, because we know them. We see them, and the world can't. You feel sorry for people. They're in prison with all this. They're captive to all this. What a blessing when they're finally able to come through all this and to finally begin to see. Now I get it. We can't govern ourselves. We'll destroy the earth if God didn't intervene. And that's where we are. Got a post coming out. I won't go into that. But anyway, After 6 months, like I said, someone, it should be a post coming out. But I leave the, I don't, timing is not fully mine either. There's a purpose for those things. But anyway, I couldn't help but thank Kara today as well, and I have for some time, how we live at the pinnacle of time. I think of all the time, of all people at any age, we live in the greatest. You may not see that. You may not fully believe that, but we do. There has never been a time like this. And I don't think sometimes we grasp what we have just because of where we are in time. And then the added awesome thing is that God has called us at this time because this is when we're alive. So he called a church, he called a group, then he called a remnant out of a church that was scattered. And how awesome is that above and beyond everything else then? And given us such understanding. Because we live at a time of a change in government. A time when Satan's going to be put away. The demonic world's going to be put away. And not have any effect upon mankind like he has for the past 6,000 years. To be of a group of people that some are going to be able to go right into that government that the world has wanted for so long when the Messiah establishes God's government on earth. This is that time. We get to see it all transpire. I don't know what that means to you, but I think I can't help it. Dumbfounded by it. I really am. What can you say? There aren't enough words. The right words. I want to read this too before I go on. Just some things in the world of how people are talking. This is from the Associated Press. Putin issues ominous warning of rising nuclear war threat. You know, people might think, well, what does that mean, you know? But if you know the time we're in, if you know what is coming, if you realize what's happening with the economy of the world right now, and you see how close things can be at any moment in time and just something going to push it over the edge at some point here, that's what brings that one on, and things begin. But people are already pushing at each other in stupid ways and around the world. Things that are taking place. I think of what's happening. I mean, what do you do? They've been fighting for centuries. Syria, Afghanistan, Iraq, Iran. It goes way, way back in time, and it's just been a continuation of tribes fighting each other. None of them get along. They never have. They'll continually kill each other. What a sick part of the world. It really is. For people who do want to have families and have children and have a decent life, they're caught in something, they're trapped in something that's been going on for centuries. And so it doesn't matter who's there, it's going to continue to happen. So you have to make choices and decisions, but the world governments can't see those things. And so we pull out. Europe maybe feels like they're forced to go in. I mean, they have their own army now, and that's what they're talking about, and they want to have a certain relationship with Iran that the U.S. doesn't want to have, and so these games that are being played out there right now are incredible. They really are. Because this is what's pushing us to the edge and lining everything up. Has been. Stage is set, like I said, at the feast. It's just a matter of when it's God's time. And then you have someone like Erdogan in Turkey. He wants to go in those areas. So you have a conversation with Erdogan and you decide to pull out. Well, it's a choice. But to let someone like that come in, we don't know what we're doing. Greece right now and Turkey, they're so close. One incident and they're at war. Just one little incident is all it's going to take because the rhetoric's already there. They've hated each other for a long, long time. And that hatred right now is being stirred up more and more. And there are certain islands out there in the Aegean that they're disputing and fighting about because, candidly, Erdogan thinks that belong to him anyway, that whole region. So this is the thinking that's going on, and so they continue to push at Greece, and Greece is starting to push back a little bit more. And one day, whether it be there or some other part of the world, when these things happen, they happen all the world because these skirmishes, these hatreds, Japan, China, it's going to come right back. This time a little bit flipped in the sense of what brought it together. Everything's ready to go. And all these things are all around the world. And I guess I was talking about Erdogan, but dare I say, some of it. I've already said enough in the past. To trust someone like that, that they be in NATO, is absolute insanity. Absolute insanity. But there are politics involved, and there are nuclear weapons involved, and there's Interlink involved, the base that we have over there to do some of the things we want to have control over, be able to have access to throughout the Middle East. So people play these games, and they trade off one thing for another. And it's happened again. It happens. Russian President Vladimir Putin issued a chilling warning Thursday about the rising threat of a nuclear war, putting the blame squarely on the U.S., which he accused of irresponsibly pulling out of the arms control treaties. Speaking at his annual news conference, Putin warned that it could lead to the destruction of civilization as a whole and maybe even our planet. He's talked about this in the past. You think now if a leader with that kind of power says those things, is it really in his mind? Kind of take him that, there's something in his mind, all right. Then going on down through here, some of this, he's speaking of things in Washington, and then he makes a comment like this: they need an external threat to cement NATO unity, Putin said, accusing the U.S. and its allies of exploiting phobias of the past to achieve domestic and political goals. He's right. Nations do this all the time, back and forth. That's what they're doing out there. And so these fears, they build them up, and it stirs things up, and it's not a good thing. It goes past a Cold War. He says, as for ruling the world, we know where the headquarters trying to do that are located, and the place isn't Moscow. You know what? I have to say, overall, he's pretty right in what he has to say. The policeman of the world, who has felt that responsibility, who has said that's what we have to do or else. But what do you do? We can't govern ourselves. The world's out of control. Then he said this, noting that the Pentagon's annual budget of over $700 billion dwarfs Russia's defense spending of $46 billion. There's a pretty big difference there. But he has a lot of nuclear weapons. And if you put a bunch on the border, you know, do you remember what happened when they came down and tried to put some in Cuba? Put a base in Cuba? Now, how'd that make the United States feel? But if we do that to them, it's like, well, that's different. Well, what's different about it? Why shouldn't they feel pushed into a corner? When you start shoving a bear into a corner, what do you think that bear is going to do? Stupid. We're stupid. Turning to nuclear weapons, Putin warned that if the United States puts intermediate-range missiles in Europe after its planned exit from the INF treaty banning them, Russia will be forced to take countermeasures. That's all you can expect. Naturally, that's going to happen. Do some do that on purpose in order to stir up some of those feelings and have greater control of certain nations and places and NATO and Europe? And yeah, sure do. We're foolish if we think otherwise. Oh, I could read more here. I'm going to go ahead with some of this. Blows the mind sometimes. After what he described as the U.S.'s reluctance to expand the New START Nuclear Arms Reduction Treaty, he said, "You aren't interested? You don't need it? Okay, we will survive, but it will be very bad for the whole of mankind, because it would take us to a very dangerous area." You know what? He's right. Because the world doesn't understand where we are right now. Certain people understand certain things that are taking place, and they don't like it. They see a change is taking place. Then also he said in part of the article here, or stated here, he noted that he's still keeping the door open for a meeting with Trump, but added that the prospect for that looks increasingly dim in view of the Democrats winning control of the House. So here's what he said. "You can predict new attacks on the president with 100% probability." Well, yeah, true. It hasn't stopped yet, and it's not going to stop. He says, "I don't know if he could engage in a direct dialogue with Russia in such conditions." True. How can you talk to them now? But, how would the world, how would the public, how would the both parties look upon that, not too favorably, with everything, all the hype that's gone out there about things that have been blown out of proportion, and many of them aren't true, sound, fully. But the point being, at a time when we really should be talking, is a time that we're not, and hands are tied. Interesting. He charged that the continuing U.S. political infighting reflects a lack of respect. Well, this is a little bit of politics here, but anyway, a lack of respect for voters who elected Trump. A little bit of, anyway, sometimes you're whitewashed over here and a little over here, and they don't want to acknowledge his victory and do anything to delegitimize the president. But then he goes on to say here, he insisted that a Russian woman in U.S. custody has not carried out any mission for the U.S., for the Russian government. May or may not. We don't know fully. Even though she pleaded guilty this month to acting as a covert agent of the government. Putin claimed that Martha Butina, if that's pronounced right, accused of trying to infiltrate the NRA. Well, that's, I think, of all things. You can infiltrate the NRA? Oh, that's a dangerous thing. I can't believe that. That's a mind-boggling thing to me. Anyway, isn't that crazy? Infiltrated the NRA. So it's pretty bad because, I mean, anyway. In American conservative circles, well, you don't want to infiltrate the American conservative circles, do you? I mean, what does that mean for the world, for the government, for, anyway, going on? So, again, infiltrating the American conservative circles around the time of Trump's election. Entered the guilty plea because of the threat, this is what Putin's saying, threat of a long prison sentence in the case, which Putin described as fabricated. Well, part of that I totally believe, because that's what they do. They'll build up one thing and exaggerate another thing and then threaten. And what do you do? Well, in some cases, you know you're going to prison, so you might as well plea it down and get less. And that's what he's saying, basically, that she's doing. So anyway, the games that people play out there are incredible. But I think it's a horrifying thing to think they could infiltrate the NRA. I'm sorry. Isn't that stupid? I mean, really. Going to prison for certain things, and because you're from one country, and you must have caused a lot of harm there, and I'm sorry. It's just insane. Absolutely insane. Going on in the story here of Joshua. What happened? Joshua 8 and verse 1. So again here, this strength, favor, these are good examples. God can take it away and God can give it. God can give victory, especially with the church, because the thing of conquering and overcoming is a matter of something that comes from God. It's something that only God can give. And the kind of strength, the kind of confidence, the kind of boldness, the kind of encouragement that we need in being able to go forward through all the things that are in front of us is something that God gives. And so it's a matter of keeping our eyes on Him, putting first things first, and we don't have to worry. Does it mean we're going to have a struggle? Well, we always have struggle in this human body, in this human life. And when the world's really bad around us, yeah, there are going to be some struggles, but God is there to take care of His people. Then the Eternal said to Joshua, do not fear. You know, because there's nothing to fear when you place God first. On the contrary, that's the time to be encouraged, because that's what God will give. Neither be discouraged. You can be encouraged instead. And take all the people of war with you to stand up and go up to Ai. So God is telling us we're going to go up against some hard things out here. There are going to be some horrifying things that we can't comprehend. But no matter how bleak or how ugly it looks out there or what it might seem like, you don't have to worry about it. You don't have to fret like the world does. You don't have to be in the kind of fear that the world is. I have seen things in God's church, interventions of things. I know of certain things that have happened in people's lives where God has intervened to do incredible things. Incredible things. And when it's time and when it's needed, God is there. So we don't have to experience those things right now in our life as a whole, but God has given enough throughout time, through the time of worldwide and on up to the time of the apostasy, of things to happen that He intervenes on a very physical plane in our lives when it's needed. Okay. And we see that from time to time in various things that happen, usually from sicknesses and illnesses and things that can happen. But even there, God allows us to experience the other part of it as well. But when we're going up against what we're headed for, God wants us to be encouraged. God wants us to be strong. And that's a matter of a relationship with Him. It's not a matter of trying to work it up. It's not a matter of trying to think positive about it. It's just a matter of more of a relationship with God. Prayer. Fasting. Prayer. To really desire to communicate, to be close to God. And so he says, and take all the people of war with you and stand and go up to Ai. This reminds me, I'm just going to read the verses to you, but it's and we're going to continue on here in Joshua. But in Zechariah 4, verse 6, then he, speaking of an angel, answered and spoken to me, saying, this is the word of the Eternal unto Zerubbabel, saying, not by might nor by power. Now here it's talking about in the sense of what we can do as human beings, in the sense of what can be done physically, on a physical plane. It's not what people can do. It's not what others are going to do. It's not, frankly, what anyone can do on a physical plane. It says, but by my Spirit. Because real strength, real might, comes from God. Not that which is physical, not what is that which we tend to look to as human beings. There are certain things we're supposed to do in preparation for things that are ahead, but on a limited scale compared to what is really going to take place, we can only prepare so much. And so we do that because we're told to, because we realize God wants us to have certain preparation. But then everything else that's going to be far greater, we know that we look to God to be on our side, to be with us, to give us the kind of strength of mind, the kind of courage in the mind that comes from Him. And the ability to know when to do certain things and when not to. God can communicate with your mind, move you to do certain things in a very powerful way whenever it's needed. Or to literally have angels, angelic beings, come to your rescue. As I've known of stories in times past where God has done that very thing. Slammed people up against the wall who would harm someone of God, nothing to be seen. Slammed up against a wall. Those are the kinds of things. God has the power to do anything He wants for His people. That's why Christ said, do you think that I can't call upon, well, how many legions was that? 6, I think it was, something like that. Anyway, whatever it was, or 12, I don't remember. Sorry. But there were several legions of angels he mentioned here that I could have called upon at the particular time when he was about to be put to death. Reality is, we can call upon God and He'll take care of us one way or another. He'll lead us. He'll work with us. He'll protect us. He'll put things in people. God, there are examples in the Scripture where God has put things and thoughts, sometimes favor, in a person's mind toward His people. How does He do that? Very simple. All of a sudden, they don't know why, but they favor you. Incredible. Probably be more than that than direct intervention of angels, frankly. So again, reading the verse again. Then the Eternal said to Joshua, don't fear and neither be discouraged, and take all the people of war with you and stand up and go up to Ai and see how I have given into your hand the king of Ai and his people and his city and his land. Now that was an incredible time when they had gone into the promised land. Look at where we are. We're going into a far greater one, a far more meaningful one. We really are. Verse 2, you shall do to Ai and her king as you did to Jericho and her king. That should have given encouragement, more boldness, God's promise. He said, I am going to do to them, see what I do for you, as I did with Jericho. Only, or as saying, and this time, you shall take the spoil and the cattle for a plunder unto yourselves. See, before they weren't. When that was taken out of Jericho, that was sin, because it wasn't theirs to take. This time, he's saying, but this time, it is yours to take. all that you can take. Lay an ambush for the city behind it. So Joshua rose up with all the people of war to go up against Ai, and Joshua chose 30,000 mighty men of strength and sent them away by night. And he commanded them, saying, "See that you lie in wait against the city, even behind the city. Do not go very far from the city, but all be ready." So be ready and go to a specific location, and this is what you're to do. "Then all the people that are with me will approach unto the city, and it shall come to pass when they come out against us as before, that we will flee before them. For they will come after us, and we will draw them away from the city, for they will say, 'They're fleeing before us as before,'" or again, "'so we will flee before them.'" So it's a matter of trying to pull them out of the city. So they're going to do this thing to go up there, and then they're going to think all of a sudden that they're fearful and they've decided not to, and they're fleeing out of here. So he said, "They're going to come after us then." God gave him to know all this. God spoke these things to him and told him various things. Some, whether he spoke them directly or whether it just was communicated to the mind, "This is what you're to do." He did it. Incredible to understand some of the things that Joshua did. He's kind of new at this in one respect because he had been with Moses for a long time, the right hand of Moses, if you will, serving. And then all of a sudden, he's thrust into this, goes over Jordan and goes to Jericho, and he's still learning. Though that's why sometimes the things of experience are unique, because there are things you can be taught, there are things you can learn, as he did through Moses, and things that he did experience to a certain degree around him, but nothing like this, because this is relatively new. They're going into a land, and God says to do various things there, and all of it's to be given to you, and you're to destroy everything. As far as people's concern, nations and people that are before you, because, well, that's what he told them to do. Destroy it all. Kill them. It's yours. It's not for them. It's yours to take. Verse 7, "Then you shall rise up from the ambush and seize the city, for the Eternal your God will deliver it into your hand." So when we obey and strive to honor God in our lives, he strengthens us and makes us greater, whatever it is we need. That's incredible to understand. A boldness there to understand such things. Place your trust, your faith, as we've had sermons in times past here, Neil, leading up to this, in God. Because you can't deliver yourself. You can't deliver yourself spiritually, and you can't deliver yourself physically for what's in front of us. God can. God can also prevent individuals from continuing on and going forward, which he will do. Some from a body that was scattered, and some who were able to be a part with us, to share with us. Sad. Verse 8, "Once you have taken the city, you shall set the city on fire. According to the commandment of the Eternal, you shall do it. I have shown you what is commanded. Therefore Joshua sent them forth, and they went to lie in ambush, and they waited before Bethel and Ai, on the west side of Ai. But Joshua remained that night among the people." So you remember the story here of what he was going to do. He said, "I'll come up with others and other of the army to fight against. And the rest of you, several thousand there, are to be in ambush and then go in and burn the city when the sign is given to them." Verse 10 says, "Joshua rose up early in the morning and numbered the people and went up, he and the elders of Israel, before the people to Ai." And verse 11, it goes on to say, "All the people of war that were with him went up and approached before the city and encamped on the north side of Ai." "Now there was a valley between them and Ai. He took about 5,000 men and set them in ambush between Bethel and Ai on the west side of the city. And when they had set the people, even all the army that was on the north of the city, and those lying in wait on the west of the city, and Joshua went that night into the midst of the valley, and it came to pass, when the king of Ai saw it, they quickly rose up early, and the men of the city went out upon the plain against Israel to battle." So it's exactly like Joshua said it would be. they're going to go up, approach. Naturally, a city, a fortified city, is going to be, you know, they see them coming again, and so they're going to be quickly prepared to go out to battle against them, or to be in battle waiting there for them. But this time here, obviously, they came out of the city. He and all the people at the pre-appointed time. But he did not know that there were those waiting in ambush against him behind the city. So Joshua and all Israel made it seem as though they were defeated before them, and they fled by the way in the wilderness. Incredible. And all the people that were in Ai were called together to pursue after them. And they pursued after Joshua and were drawn away from the city. And there was not a man left in Ai or Bethel that did not go up out after Israel. And so again here, primarily they were going up against Ai, but Bethel is right there close by, and I don't know exactly on which side of it. But anyway, the point being is they were allied together. They were the same families and so forth, and they were going to come out and fight against Israel. And they left the city open and pursued after Israel. Then the Eternal said unto Joshua, stretch out the spear that is in your hand toward Ai, and I will give it into your hand. So again here, we don't know how he told these things to him, but he did. I simply believe it's a matter of how God communicates with the mind. After a certain experience and time, you know this is what God is doing, and you do it because you know it's, you know how God works. And so Joshua had learned these various things, or whatever it took, through experience and time. It doesn't have to be something verbal and specific words, but it may have been. Time will tell. We'll know one day. Stretch out the spear that's in your hand toward the eye and give it, and I will give it into your hand. So Joshua stretched out the spear that he had in his hand toward the city. You know, there are a lot of things, there are things that happen in our lives sometimes. There are things that God leads us to see and to do at a particular moment in time. And we've experienced that in the church, and frankly, God has worked with us more and more to think that way. It's like saying when we're told to turn left, we turn left. When we're time to turn right, we turn right, because it's a matter of putting God first. It's a matter of being in unity and oneness and harmony, whether it be a physical people and nation as they were, and all they'd experienced already, because they had come over Jordan. They had come over and the things that had been destroyed in Jericho, and they witnessed these things. They had experience in various things of how God worked with them. And so they were more convicted of a certain way that God works. And so the more convicted, even on a physical plane that they were, they did it, and God blessed them. And we've learned that in the church in a very powerful way, in ways that I have never experienced in God's church to this degree in the last many years. And so it's a process that God is bringing us through as we draw closer and closer to a particular moment in time, because that's what's needed. And because that's what we have to be prepared for, or He's preparing us for. And so there are things from time to time that God will lead us to see and do, and we've already experienced those things, and there are things in front of us yet that we don't know about. And we do it when God says to. We just do it because we have the experience. We've gone through enough things to understand this is it, or whatever, this moment in time, this is what we're supposed to accomplish. To me, that's a comforting thing to know and to understand, because there are things you can rely upon, that you can depend upon. And because we have experienced what we have to this point in time, we're a much stronger people. That's why I think about what was written concerning an extraordinary 4.5 years. We still don't grasp the depth of what took place at that time up here, of what God molds and fashions our minds. God molds and fashions our thinking. There is a unity and a oneness as a whole within the body that's becoming stronger and stronger, because that which is not at one is going by the wayside more and more. That's been going on for some time now, candidly, within the body, and especially since 2012, when some of these things began, this process. And I find them immensely inspiring, because it's a matter of seeing God's hand at work and how He works with us as a people, and how He prepares us, and how He molds and fashions us. That's why I marvel sometimes in going back and looking at various, whether it be a few months or a few years or just the last year, and you see there's a process, there's a building process, if you will. You build up on one thing to go to the next, and that's what God is doing with us in our minds, but that which is being taught, that which He is giving to us, it is a building process, and it's exciting. And the more we witness those things and the closer we are to God, the more we see them and grasp them, the stronger we will be, the more encouraged we'll be because it's about a relationship with God. And no one can give it to you. It's about your choices and your personal relationship with God. How much you want His way of life, how much you're striving to conquer and overcome self, how much you're putting into it, how much you're praying about these things. It comes down to each individual and what we do individually. Now, if I can find my place again. What verse was I in? 19? Okay. Start again. 19. Those in ambush rose up quickly out of their place, and they ran as soon as he had stretched out his hand. So, again, part about here, stretching the spear toward Ai. Then that was a signal for them to do what they were to accomplish. It says, and they entered into the city, and they took it and quickly set the city on fire. And when the men of Ai looked behind them, they saw this as the smoke of the city rising up into the sky, and they had no ability, in other words, no means, to flee this way or that way. They were caught. So they began to realize that. They began to understand that. What happens then? Well, the fear was on them because they saw something that they weren't expecting. Yeah, it's an incredible story. I think there's so many stories in the Old Testament of things that God has done and the unique ways He's done it to inspire people, to motivate people, to encourage people about His intervention in their lives, very much on a physical plane, but all the time there are spiritual lessons to be learned along the way. So to flee this way or that way, and the people that had fled to the wilderness turned back upon them, pursuing them. And when Joshua and all Israel saw that the ambush had taken the city and that the smoke of the city was rising, then they turned again and slew the men of Ai and the others. In other words, those who had gone in to take the city and burn it. And the others went out of the city again. In other words, this is from their rear because they've gone out against the Israelites. Now they see the city burning and they're caught in the middle and not knowing what to do. And here the Israelites are coming at them now to kill them on one side. And all of a sudden, there are others coming from the rear to kill them from the other side. So they were in the middle of Israel, some on this side and some on that side, and they struck them down so that they let none of them remaining or able to escape. Again, here sometimes I marvel at some stories in the sense of how they can be read. People thinking, well, what a... Especially some of the... When God told them to go in and destroy everything, and they did. In the mind of human beings, sometimes people can't grasp that. How could God do that? Why would God do that? And yet, just as we see certain things happening in certain nations today, like the Middle East, like Afghanistan, Syria, Iraq, Iran, Yemen, all those places that are having problems that they have, and you think of the centuries that these things have gone on and on and on, and a mindset of people who have continually been killing themselves and killing others. And much of the world is like that anyway, from time to time, from period to period. Look at the Assyrians. It's the way of the world. And yet, sometimes human beings can become a little pious and a little self-righteous, and because they don't grasp the great God and what He says and why He does, and because they don't understand His purpose and plan, I think of young children. I think of young children who live in certain parts of the world that for many of them, because of what they experience, and I'm not going to go into some of the things they experience because some of it is really, really, really bad. But it were better that some of those children die at a very young age, be resurrected in the great white throne, than to have things happen up here that hurt the mind, that scar the mind. And the years and years and years, once they're called even, with God's Spirit, to have that changed, oh, that's another matter. And sometimes what happens to some people, they can respond in very horrifying ways, and sometimes they become the ones who had things done to them. And because of that, the mind becomes so corrupt that it comes to a point in time that they can't even be given God's Spirit. Some can, some can't. Depends on how corrupt the mind becomes. It's an incredible thing that God's revealed to us in the past few years about the corruption of the mind and what human beings can do to it, that because there was a time when we didn't understand that it was basically believed within the church that every human being who has ever lived will definitely be resurrected in the great white throne if they're not in the first resurrection. Not true. Not to live for 100 years. When the mind is so corrupt, so vile, so evil, that God knows the spirit in that mind, what is the purpose? What is the purpose of giving life again and then offering them His spirit? It'd be like offering that to Satan, which can't be done because of a spirit being that he is and what he's already done to his mind, but that's how insane that would be. What's the purpose? The mind is already set in evil. It will never want him. It will never desire him. There's some within the scattered body, some that were a part of the apostasy that I wonder about some of them sometimes, that by the time they were put into positions of things that they did, their minds were so corrupt that they really came out in time, they never wanted any of this. They never really believed it, never really wanted it. They always wanted something else. But they rode the ride for a while, acted as though they were a part of the temple, lived as though they were a part of the temple, spoke like they were a part of the temple. And that's even more vile. If begotten of God's Spirit and you do that, how evil is that? Anyway, I'm so thankful that we have learned these things because it gives a lot greater peace of mind. Because I think of a lot of despots, very evil people who have lived through time, certain minds, and to think that they're going to be given an opportunity to be in God's kingdom when they don't, their minds are so evil that they would never want something like that. It's one thing to come to repentance because you see your sins, but when a mind doesn't even want that because it's justified and it has such hatred and bitterness towards other kinds of people that it sees in a certain way, you can't change that mind if it doesn't want changed. To me, that's an incredible thing to come to understand that God has given to His church in the past few years. So again, all these people, they're going to be resurrected because God looks at time differently than we do. Traditional Christianity doesn't look at it in the same way. They don't understand. They don't grasp. And if they really, well, they can't even believe the things they have on a spiritual plane, obviously, but even if they did, were able to believe things in a stronger way, that just doesn't make any sense. Their minds are so far out there in things that they think about life and death because they really don't know. That's why they judge in some of the ways that they do sometimes in such a distorted, perverted way. And that's why they feel that this God here was a mean, cruel God, because that's the concept that a lot of people have. That's the concept that Jesus Christ came along, that he got rid of his harsh father's law because it was too harsh. It was too cruel. He was too cruel in the Old Testament. So he came along to help people. I think, what a distorted, perverted mind. So it goes on to say here, if I can find my place again. 23, thank you so much. Oh, I'm way off base this time. I better start marking these. It says, they took the king of Ai alive and brought him to Joshua. So it came to pass when Israel had made an end of slaying all the inhabitants of Ai on the land, all of them. Not anyone was to be left alive. When they went in to take the land, no one was to remain alive. God says, this is yours. I'm giving it to you, and this is what you're to do. So it came to pass when Israel had made an end of slaying all the inhabitants of Ai on the land in the wilderness wherein they chased them, and when they had all fallen on the edge of the sword until they were destroyed, that all the Israelites returned unto Ai and struck it down with the edge of the sword. Everything, except animals and so forth that they were able to take this time, and goods and so forth that were apart for them, that God had set apart and said, this is yours now to take. So it was, verse 25, that all who fell that day, both men and women, were 12,000, even all the men of Ai. For Joshua did not draw his hand back wherewith he had stretched out the spear until he had utterly destroyed all the inhabitants of Ai. And so we continued to do that, you know, hold that there and till it was finished. It was a symbol of that which God had given to them to follow, to do, and they did it. Israel took the cattle and the spoil of that city as a plunder. Livestock, basically, is really the word. Of the city as a plunder for themselves, according to the word of the Eternal, which he had commanded Joshua. And Joshua burnt Ai and made it a heap forever, even a desolation unto this day. And he hung the king of Ai on a tree until evening time. So that was during the day, and then had him hung there. And then it says here, as evening, as soon as the sun was down, Joshua commanded that they should take his corpse down from the tree and cast it at the entering of the gate of the city and raise up over it a great heap of stones that remains unto this day. Then verse 30. Then Joshua built an altar unto the Eternal God of Israel in Mount Ebal, as Moses, the servant of the Eternal, had commanded the children of Israel, as it is written in the book of the law of Moses. So there are things written back in Deuteronomy that they were to do. And there were two mountains and certain things that take place here in some of the story that we'll come to at some point here. But anyway, this is where they were to do these things. And it says, and to make an altar of whole stones, meaning uncut, in other words, without human hands, over which no man has shaped with iron tools. And they offered thereon burnt offerings unto the Eternal and sacrificed peace offerings. And he wrote there upon the stones a copy of the law of Moses. I don't know how they did that, what part this was, but that's what it says they did. And so the law was written there, and the stones were there. And he says, which he wrote in the presence of the children of Israel. So again, how those things were accomplished and done, I don't have the foggiest idea. Would they chisel them out with, you know, out of the rock? I don't know. Had rocks big enough for that? I don't know. But says that's what he did, wrote out the word of God and the commandments of God or whatever that were given to them, the children of Israel. And so again here, as a people, as a nation, constantly, continually being reminded to look to God. And here's how you're to live your life. Now that was to physical people from time to time when they had certain things take place in their life like this, a great victory that was given to them. They saw God's hand in it. And they were to know this came from God. You didn't do this. You tried once when you had sin, and how'd that go? Then when you obeyed, I gave it to you. I gave you the strength. I gave you the help. I gave you the encouragement. I gave you the strategy to be applied to this, to take the city without a loss of any life. That's what God did. And so those things were embedded upon a very carnal, physical people who didn't have God's Spirit. And I think of us. I think of the church then. How God continually, after various things in our life, no matter when it might be, but in God's time, He reveals things to us, He gives things to us, He gives His Word to us, because we've gone a long way beyond just the commandments. The commandments are a code of life, of how we're to live our life, and there are those things we're to learn from it that we apply on a spiritual plane. But I think of all the truths that God has added to those things to expand them, to expound upon them, and to show something even greater. Starting with whatever, the three in Sardis, because it's about how we as God's people, as a church, must live. And every one of those we can learn things from. Awesome things. So, yes, there are 10 that we're very much to live by, but those magnify them, just like tithing. Of all things, I think of that often now because of things we've gone through in recent years here, where so many, not a few, far too many people have been robbing God. And I think not to steal, that's one of the commandments. It's one thing not to steal from other human beings or from your boss or from your neighbor or whatever it might be as a matter of thinking. But to do that on a spiritual plane when you've been begotten of God's Spirit, to do that toward God and not to fear. Anyway, not to put aside the second tithe faithfully, because yes, it's going to be yours to use, but as God even gave the Israelites certain things to her to do, you're to use or do things in a very specific way and no other way. So obedience to God, wanting to honor God, wanting to please God. And what do we learn from those things? Everything belongs to God. It's all God's. How blessed are we that He's given us what we have? How much more do we want? Do we desire to have that we don't have, that we're not content with? Does that mean that if we don't have more, we're not going to survive? We're not going to be at peace? We're going to have too much drama in our life if we can't live here or have that vehicle or buy this or buy that? Which is more important, to have? To have those things or to have God? To me, that's me. It's a simple thing. For human nature, sometimes it's not so simple. But it should be. If you have the impregnation of God's Spirit in your mind, it should be a very simple, easy thing to do. And it should be one of the first things of all things that's easy for us to do. It's like I mentioned last Sabbath. I'd rather have what's inside that closet. If I have to live in there, put out a roll each night and live in there, or just a little bit more maybe, just maybe double that size over there. I'd like to have twice that. Because that's a pretty small closet. So I'd like to have a little bit more than that. Especially if there are two of us. Sometimes we get in each other's way right in the kitchen. But anyway. But seriously, it'd be better to be content with that. And I can do it. Could do it. It's not a problem. If that's what's required. And thank God. And thank God. Everything belongs to God. At any time, it's not about physical things. Physical things can be nice if you've worked for them, if you've earned them. They can add something to your life, but they don't make your life. They don't make you happy. They don't make you fulfilled. They might make some of the journey easier at times, a little more green, as long as it's holding up. Things can be made a little easier sometimes, but you know, when there's a struggle, what do? First things first, God's first. It's very simple. And so I think of all the things that have been added, the 18 truths that God gave through Mr. Armstrong to us, above and beyond the three, concerning the Sabbath, that God's a creator and everything belongs to Him. Think of those two things alone, just the two. The Sabbath, or Sabbaths, but the Sabbath at that point in time. Tithing, and how they go together and what they mean and how they point to God and how we can learn so much just from those two alone. 7,000 years, God has a plan. Every Sabbath, thankfully, we have a sixth day where we can crash finally, and we're commanded, don't go and do any more, because as human beings, some of us would just keep going, you know. And so we tell them, no, put it aside. It's a day to spend toward me and your thinking and your mind, and especially in what I'm going to give you, Sabbath by Sabbath. How blessed are we just with those two alone? And then all the others that God gave through time here, whereby we live our lives. And they mean so much. But we all have choices. And so he wrote there the law. And all Israel, verse 33, their elders, officers, and judges stood on both sides of the ark before the priests, the Levites, who carried the ark of the covenant of the Eternal, as well the stranger as those born among them, half of them over against Mount Gerizim and half toward Mount Ebal. And Moses, the servant of the Eternal, this is back in Deuteronomy as well, as Moses, the servant of the Eternal, had commanded before that they should bless the people of Israel. So from one place they would speak of curses, from one place they would speak of the blessings. I don't understand all that, but anyway, why it's there, hasn't been shown, but it's the process that God had for them to learn from. And afterward, it says, he read all the words of the law, the blessings and curses, because that's where it was to be done, and God was very specific how they were to do that there in the book of Deuteronomy. So this is exactly what he was doing, exactly what had been taught through Moses, according to all that's written in the book of the law. And so, to read all the words of the law, sometimes for them as a physical people, there are things throughout time that they did this, certain occasions that they did this, where that time was spent, big occasions as a whole. But for us, it should be just regular occasions. Not that we specifically go back and read all of Deuteronomy, because those things, there are things that apply to us. More than obviously the 57 truths. We know the Ten Commandments. We have the 57 truths, plus one. And I don't know how else to put it. That's where it's going to stay, I think. It's just plus one, the one that freed us. Oh, awesome. Totally and completely. Separated us totally and completely from all the rest. Joshua the Christ. And so sometimes that's why I've encouraged people to, on occasion, to go back and think about, meditate upon, pray about, if you would, some of the truths, one of the truths, just from time to time, just so they're deeply etched into our thinking, into our mind, because that can help stir up gratitude, thankfulness for what he's given to us, the ability to see them as we do, the ability to understand them, and it's a part of writing them in our hearts and minds up here. They don't just stay there. That's why God has us year by year go to the Feast of Tabernacles. That's why every year we have a Passover, Days of Unleavened Bread, Pentecost, because we have to be reminded and because there are things we're to think upon so that they're at the forefront of our mind. And from time to time, then we build upon those. As we hear different sermons, we build upon those things. We truly do, and what's contained in them. So it says here, afterward, he read all the words of the law, the blessings and the cursings according to all that was written in the book of the law. Every word that Moses commanded, Joshua read before all the congregation of Israel, with the women, the little ones, the strangers who lived among them. Then we're going on to chapter 9 here. So they had come into the promised land, conquered Jericho, and news like that throughout the entire region spread like wildfire. And all those countries, all those people, they all knew they were the ones that came out of Egypt. They knew who they were. That wasn't lost through time. The peoples out there knew it. And when they knew that they were up to Jericho and what happened there, there were people who knew it. There were people who went out and spread the word about what happened there. And it caused incredible fear because they knew the story. These are the people that destroyed Egypt, the God. Their God that destroyed Egypt. Now, how they said it, whatever they believed, whatever was in their mind, but they were afraid because they knew the history and some of the stories here that there was no Pharaoh, there was no Egyptian army after that point in time. That went throughout the whole region. And so now we're coming up on the scene of some of these people and how they're responding to what they see because they have also heard the rest of the story. They've also heard the rest of the story. That God said it was their land. That the God who brought them out of Egypt, they have heard the story of what was being said that God had told them. Now, how that spread, how it got there, don't know. But it spread. And they heard the stories. And they heard what they had been told, that this belongs to Israel, that that's what their God has said. That this is what these people that are coming up against you believe, whether they believe it or not, it's immaterial. And it came to pass when all the kings who were on the side of Jordan, in the hills and the lowland, and in the coasts of the great sea toward Lebanon, so again, all the way from the Mediterranean region there, all the way up through there, up through Lebanon, and all the way back then toward Jordan and so forth, all the way down through there, that huge region that we know that was given to Israel, even more on the other side of Jordan as well. But going on here, and it came to pass when all the kings who were on this side of the Jordan, in the hills and lowland and the coast, the great sea of Lebanon, the Hittite, the Amorite, the Canaanite, the Perizzite, the Hivite, the Jebusite, heard about it, that they gathered together in one accord to fight or to battle Joshua and Israel. So they knew this was a large group of people coming up against them. They heard what happened to Jericho. They heard what happened to Ai and Bethel. It was Bethel, wasn't it? And so they heard these things, and so they were joining together to be an army together to fight. But when the inhabitants of Gibeon heard that Joshua, what Joshua had done to Jericho and Ai, they worked craftily or cunningly. In other words, they were very deceitful about what they were getting ready to do here, but they did it for a purpose and a reason that comes out in the story as we go along. And went and pretended to be ambassadors, in other words, from another country, that were sent out to go and talk to them. And they took old sacks on their donkeys, old wineskins torn and mended, old and patched sandals on their feet, and old garments on themselves, and all the bread of their provisions was dry and moldy. So why were they doing all this? Well, they were deceitful and cunning and crafty in what their aim was to accomplish here. And they went to Joshua to the camp at Gilgal and said to him and to the men of Israel, "We have come from a far country." That's why the bread's moldy. That's why our shoes, sandals look like they do, and things are broken here, and we've been in the best we can. "Now, therefore, make a covenant with us." In other words, we want peace with you. We see how great the things that are taking place with you. And they went farther. Then the men of Israel said to the Hivite, "Perhaps you dwell in the midst of us. Then how could we make a covenant with you?" You know, this is really busy. We're skeptical here. So how do we know? Why'd they ask that? Because they've been told to destroy it all. Okay. But they said to Joshua, "We are your servants." And Joshua said to them, "Who are you and where do you come from?" And they said to him, "From a very far country your servants have come because of the name of the Eternal, your God. For we have heard of his fame and all that he did in Egypt, and all that he did to the two kings of the Amorites who are beyond the Jordan, and Sihon, to Sihon, king of Heshbon, and Og, king of Bashan, who was at Ashtaroth. Therefore, our elders and all the inhabitants of our country spoke to us, saying, 'Take provisions with you for the journey and go to meet them and say to them, we are your servants. Now, therefore, make a covenant with us. This bread of ours we took hot for our provisions.'" You're lying through their teeth, obviously. "We took it hot for our provisions from our houses on the day we departed to come to you. But now look, it's dry and moldy." They were afraid. And they wanted to save their lives because they believe what they heard. And they believed that they could be destroyed or were going to be destroyed. And so they really were moved here to do something in a very deceitful and cunning and lying sort of way to get them to say something here about a covenant so that they could live, so they wouldn't be destroyed like they knew that God had told them was going to happen. See, these things they already, these people heard. "And these wineskins which we filled were new." And see, they're torn. "And these are our garments and our sandals have become old because of the very long journey." Then the men of Israel took some of their provisions, but they did not ask counsel of the Eternal. Now, it's a little, kind of an awkward translation, but basically here, it's being pointed out here, they really messed up. And they didn't ask God about it. Anything to learn from that? You know, God can bless us, give us certain things. I think of truths that God continues to give to us. Things we take for granted sometimes in life. Sometimes familiarity breeds contempt, whatever it might be in life. Sometimes we begin to let down on whatever we're doing in our life. Sometimes we're not pushing forward like we should. Sometimes our attitude and spirit isn't right. Sometimes we allow physical things to get in the way. Sometimes we get ourselves into trouble because we aren't putting God first and because we're not seeking counsel from God. No matter what it is we do in life, we should go to God and ask for help, ask for wisdom, ask for insight. Now, sometimes people do that. I want to throw something else at her. Sometimes people will pray about something and then something happens in their life, or they make a certain, sometimes they just make a certain decision to do something that they kind of wanted to do all along anyway. It's like, this is what God showed me to do. This is what I'm supposed to do. That's not always true. Sometimes we can read God into things, and that's one area you have to be so careful of not to do. Not to read everything into your life as though this is what God has given me to do. This is where I'm supposed to be. This is when I'm to do it. This is... Be careful, because the majority of times it's just choices. But you, the point being is what you're to do is to look to God first and to ask God for guidance and direction in your life. Help prayerfully in making certain choices and decisions. Help in being able to see self so that we don't do things just because that's what self wants to do. Big, big lesson there. But because you're truly, honestly seeking God in your life, because kind of, candidly, that's your habit. That just should be the way we are day by day anyway. Whatever we do, whatever we put our hand to do, asking God for guidance in our life, asking God for direction in our life, asking most above all, if we understand it, God's Spirit in our life. That we know we need His Holy Spirit, that we want His Holy Spirit. We want to be able to battle this, to fight this, and asking Him for help to see ourselves. See, sometimes it's not asking to get something or to want a specific answer on a matter, but it's asking God for help to deal with this so that we can see this and understand this. Sometimes it's not, it can be a hard battle just seeing self and understanding what's in this. And so it's a matter of asking God to reveal it to us. And you know what? God will. If you really want that, God will help you. And He'll give you the help to deal with it, to conquer it. If that's really what's in your heart and your mind, that you want the help to see self, to see what's wrong in what you're doing and how you're saying things or how you're thinking about things or how you're talking to others or how you're thinking toward others, and on it goes. And you're asking God to reveal these things in your mind that you know you don't see fully and clearly. Because none of us do perfectly 100%. Because the carnal mind, it's a battle. And that's generally what's first in our thinking. What we desire to do, what we have planned, what we're thinking about, what we're kind of leaning toward. And so it's not like asking God to do and get what you want. It's a matter of just asking God for help and wisdom, insight, to deal with how you're thinking, to hopefully and prayerfully that He would lead us to making wise choices and decisions and to be able to see the things that we can't see that are wrong. And so the whole point here is that we're to keep our eyes on God. We're to ask God for counsel on a regular basis in our lives, day by day. We really are. That's how we're, that should just be the way we think. And as we do that then, especially when we're coming up against something bigger as far as a decision or something we're doing in our lives, some problem before it turns into great drama, when it's a little llama, and dealing with it then and asking God for help in it. That's good. That's wise. That's smart. And God will work with you in those things if that's where the heart is. If that's where the mind is, it doesn't mean it's going to happen overnight, but through time, God works with us in that way. He really does. And so here, what an incredible thing that they could have done, should have done, and didn't do. Even Joshua didn't at this point. Doesn't matter who we are in life, sometimes if we're not careful, we can see certain things happening around us. We can grasp and see certain things that God is doing. And it just takes a moment. It just takes a moment to take your eyes off of something, to pass up something that should have been taking place. How simple would that have been just to go in prayer and ask God, what should I do? See, they went ahead and made a decision without counseling God. Giant mistake in life to just bombard through life without seeking guidance, direction, help, favor, counsel from God. That means you're looking to Him for His Holy Spirit to work in your mind and in your life. There we go. Verse 15. So Joshua made peace with them, because that's what everybody wanted. The elders did anyway. All the elders that were together there, that's what they'd kind of determined. Yeah, looks right to me. Look at the sandals. Look at the wineskins. Look at the bread. Yep, pretty easy decision. Sometimes things might seem like they're pretty simple in front of us. Don't be too quick to think that way. There are decisions sometimes we make that can get us into a peck of trouble. They really can. And God lets us make choices and decisions. But boy, wouldn't it be a whole lot better if we were to seek His counsel, and because of that, He intervened to bring about, create some circumstance, some situation that helped us. You ever experienced that? Well, we should have in our lives if we are watchful. So Joshua made peace with them and made a covenant with them to let them live. Because see, if they were in the land, they were not to live. And the rulers of the congregation swore to them, they can live. We'll not touch you. We'll not strike you down. We're going to make a covenant with you. Be at peace. You can be our servants. And it happened at the end of 3 days, after they had made a covenant with them, that they heard that they were their neighbors who dwelt near them. Now that should have struck some fear in them. Say, look what we've done. We've made a covenant that we should not have made. God told us to destroy, to strike down everything in this land. And we've made a covenant. Not a small thing. Then the children of Israel journeyed and came. Sometimes we just don't seem to grasp. I think of different ones who've gone by the wayside. I think of different ones who've made bad decisions, and some of the stupidest things sometimes we do as human beings. I mentioned over and over again, think about tithing and second tithe and so forth, because it's happened far, 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 far too much in God's church, even in the past year. Okay? Sadly, even since the Feast of Tabernacles. Things of that nature, there are the things that take place, the human mind, the desires, the lust of the flesh. That can be that which is sexual in nature, because that's a giant pull to the human mind as well. And people stumble at those things far too often in God's church. And those are great battles in front of us as human beings. We need to understand that and strive to be on guard against that and strive to obey God, to ask for help and favor from God to fight those things. Then the children of Israel journeyed and came to the cities on the third day. Now their cities were Gibeon, Kephira, that's how it's pronounced, Beeroth, and Kirjath-Jearim. But the children of Israel did not strike or attack them, because the rulers of the congregation had sworn to them by the eternal God of Israel. And all the congregation complained against the rulers. Why did you do this? Well, because they were deceived, they were lied to, and they swallowed it. And they didn't seek counsel from God. God would have told them. God would have revealed it to them. God would have shown them one way or another what was true. God would have created a circumstance, whatever it might be, whether he directly told, communicated it to Joshua or what, but God would have let them know. No, do not make a covenant with them. He would have revealed who they were and where they were from. For all the rulers had told all the congregation, we have sworn to them by the eternal God of Israel, and now therefore we may not strike them. So they were caught. They made a covenant before God. They can't lay a hand upon them, of any of them in those towns. This is what we will do to them. We will let them live. Otherwise, wrath may come upon us because of the oath which we swore to them. So the ruler said to them, let them live, and let them be woodcutters and water carriers for all the congregation, as the rulers had promised them. Verse 22, then Joshua called for them, and he spoke to them, saying, why have you deceived us? Basically, why have you lied and dealt treacherously with us? Well, they're going to tell him. They're going to respond now with the truth. And why did you say we are very far from you when you really dwell near us. Now, therefore, you are cursed. So they didn't get away with anything in one respect. He said, you are cursed because of this. You brought something down upon yourself because you have lied to God's people. In essence, he didn't have to say it that way, but that's basically what it amounts to. And none of you shall be freed from being slaves. So this was their lot in life from then on, that point in time. They were to be slaves. Woodcutters and water carriers for the house of my God. So servants you wanted to be, servants you are from here on out. You're never going to have freedom. Verse 24, and then answered Joshua and said, because it was certainly told your servants. I was thinking of the spiritual aspect of some of that, of lying to God, of things about being a slave. You know, that's what God gives us if we want it. Just go right back into slavery. I think of so many in the church, so many associated with being with PKG over the years. They don't understand what they bring upon themselves. Cursed incredibly so. And people don't grasp sometimes what they bring upon themselves. The misery, the heartache, the suffering that they're going to have. Never to have this truth again in this age. Incredible. You wanted that? That's what you got. Right back out there with the world. You're enslaved to it. Don't understand it even. And so again here, verse 24, and they answered Joshua and said, because it was certainly told your servants how that the Eternal your God commanded his servant Moses to give you all the land. They knew it. This word had spread. Incredible. And to destroy all the inhabitants of the land from before you. They had already heard these things. All these other nations that were gathering together, they've heard these things. These acted upon it because it was so close by. They heard what happened to Ai, and they were fearful. And so they wanted to be deceitful and hopefully being able to save their lives as a people there and not having to pack up and move to some other part of the world. Therefore, we were so very afraid for our lives because of you. And therefore have done this thing. So in one respect, on a carnal sort of way, kind of shrewd on their part, because if you really believe something that's happening and coming toward you, how do you respond to that? Well, they saved their lives and they became servants, but anyway. And now behold, we are in your hand, as it seems good and right unto you, do to us, you do to us. Let me read that again here. As it seems good and right unto you to do unto us, then do so. And he did so unto them and delivered them out of the hand of the children of Israel so that they did not slay them. And so they were told no one was to lay a hand upon them, that these areas here, these specific areas now, we're not to destroy them. Everything else, as we go into the country, into the land, we're to destroy. But them you leave your hands off of. And for the altar of the Eternal, even unto this day, in the place which he should choose. So, I'm sorry. Yeah, Joshua made them hewers, as it says here. Hewers of wood and drawers of water for the congregation. I'm going to go ahead and stop there. Getting into some other things here as we go on. So, anyway, with that, we'll stop for a day and continue on next week.